Hey everyone, welcome to the Pot Awareness Podcast, and thanks for joining me. This podcast is specifically for about educating and raising awareness for animals and rescues and organizations across the United States and world. It really goes a long way towards this mission when our listeners rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and all of our other podcast platforms. Also, be sure to check us out on our official website at pawawareness.org and on social media at TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at pawawareness_podcast. You can check us out for all of our latest bits and clips of our podcast, as well as Pet of the Week and Pet of the Month. If you're listening and involved with an animal rescue organization or have a story of your own that you want to share, reach out to us at info@pawawareness.org and we can get you on the podcast. Thanks for watching, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hey everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Paw Awareness Podcast. Today I am talking with Kate Morris with Mandy's Paws Animal Rescue.
Hello.
We were just talking before the podcast. You said that you guys are you just reached 300 animals saved. I love what you guys are doing. I'm really pumped to talk with you. So I want you to go ahead, introduce yourself, the organization, and also I'm excited to hear how you got started. How did this all come to fruition?
Sure. So I'm Kate. I'm 22. And Mandy's Paws is a rescue organization that focuses on saving animals directly from the streets of Los Angeles. Mostly cats. We have saved a few dogs here and there. But we mostly focus on kitties as of now. And I have 5 cats of my own. Obviously all rescues. It's a full house.
All right.
Yeah. And the way the rescue got started was when I was 19, unfortunately, my mom suddenly passed away. And she was a huge animal rescuer. So she would save the most vulnerable animals from the shelter, foster them, nurse them back to health. So when she suddenly passed, I decided to create a rescue in her honor, hence the name Mandy's Paws Animal Rescue. It is named after my mother. So that's how we got started. I had no idea what I was doing. I just kind of pulled everything out of my butt, just figuring it all out. And I finally got the hang of it and started actually saving animals. And it's gone up and up from there.
And has that been something, was that something that you and your mom shared, like a passion you shared was cats? Like what really triggered that? Like, was it like to want to start an animal rescue? Was that just something you're both passionate about? Obviously you have 5 cats. So that's like, it's something you hold close to your heart.
Yes, that's a great question. So I remember growing up, my mom was always fostering animals and she always had like a litter of puppies or sick kittens or a kitten with broken bones. Sorry about the background noise. I'm at a coffee shop.
But good.
I loved being a part of it, helping her out and spending time with the animals. And I always used to say as a kid, like, oh, I want to rescue animals one day too. And and then when she passed, I thought, well, what better way to honor her than to create a rescue? It was something I wanted to do much further down the line. I didn't know if I'd ever do it, but her passing away kind of inspired me to just, you know, make a legacy and save animals in her name, because I know she would have continued doing it her whole life. So, yeah.
That's so cool. And what were some of the obstacles that you faced when not knowing, you know, not just figuring it out on the go? I mean, I can really relate to that with this whole podcast thing. No idea about animal welfare or anything. It's just something that I was passionate about. And I feel like passion prevails. So I'm really interested to hear what your thoughts are on that.
Oh my goodness. There was quite a lot of obstacles. I had very little experience. I had been fostering for shelters a little bit. I didn't know how the rescue world worked. I didn't know how brutal it could be in terms of some animal rescuers can not be super kind to humans. And I wasn't really aware. In the beginning, I faced a lot of doubt. I had some larger rescues messaging me saying, like, this actually happened to me. I had some larger rescuers messaging me saying, why are you doing this? Like, you're wasting your time. You're not going to make an actual rescue. Like, you're just trying to be a hero. And I'm very sensitive. So I would cry for days when I get these messages, but I never gave up. I was like, you know what? Like, they don't know me. They don't know my reasoning behind this rescue. And I kept going and I made mistakes in the beginning. One mistake we made, that you know, we recovered from it, but we took in a doggy way in the beginning, very, very large doggy who had some serious aggression issues. And the shelter we pulled him from didn't tell us he had aggression issues. And I didn't know how to handle that. And it was a whole issue, and we had him safe and sound, but I didn't, you know, I bit off way more than I could chew. We ended up finding a good place for him in the end. Another rescue took him, but it was like, I realized, okay, I need to know what I'm doing. I need to like expect the unexpected. And, I realized that, okay, I need to focus more on kitties and dogs that I know for sure are relatively easy to manage because I don't have that experience. So I learned, and a lot of times I've had animals with severe surgeries and medical conditions. I had to learn how to fundraise. Before I had a following on Instagram, I had no idea how to fundraise. I didn't know who to ask. I didn't know how to do it. I just kept making like GoFundMes, and I was just trying all different things to save animals. Finally, you know, we got a big enough following where our followers will contribute small amounts and it adds up, and we're able to cover our vet bills. But there was a lot of trouble in the beginning, like finances, finding foster homes that I knew were reliable. I had a couple irresponsible fosters at first. So I learned to really, it's called vetting a foster. When you're making sure that they are a good foster, you know, you have to do a home check. You have to ask them a lot of questions. You have to make sure that they are going to take really good care of this animal. So I learned a lot, made mistakes, picked myself up. Now I think I really got the rhythm of it. It's been 2 years now since we founded Mandy's Paws, and I think I kind of know what I'm doing now a lot more.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I mean, you know, anyone can figure anything out if you just stick to it. And
yes,
that's awesome seeing you kind of persevere through that. And I'm kind of curious too, what does it look like? I know that you mentioned you've saved 300, was it 300 cats or is it 300 animals together?
300 animals with, it's mostly cats with like maybe four or five dogs sprinkled in there. So mostly cats, but we've saved a few dogs too.
Yeah, that's cool. And what does that look like? When you say like, let's get a cat from the street, do you immediately have fosters lined up? Is that how that works? Like, what's your networking situation look like? Like, I'm really curious on all that.
Oh, that's a good question. So I would say it's a case by case basis. So sometimes we have fosters ready and waiting who are like, okay, I could take in an animal from this age group. I'm comfortable with medical. I'm not comfortable with medical. On their foster application, we ask them what they are comfortable with. What are they comfortable with? Bottle feeding, like all these things. So we have a few waiting for animals. Other times we do not have a foster, in which case we can't really rescue the animal until they have a place to go. So what I do, if we do need a foster, is I'll start posting. I'll post a picture of the animal, explain the animal's story, see if I can find a foster by networking. So Instagram is our main platform where we share and network, but we'll go on Facebook. We'll have other pages, larger rescue pages share for us. Also, a lot of rescuers do like word of mouth. Like one rescue will have a foster that we borrow from another rescue. Like we all kind of work together. So yeah, it's kind of case by case. Sometimes we have a foster ready and waiting. Other times we need to post and find an ideal foster before we can take the animal in.
Gotcha. And what is the cats on the street in the Los Angeles area, what does that look like? I mean, is it just, yeah, I guess I'm just 2 hours north, but I'm just not familiar with that.
It's bad. I will tell you, it's bad. If you are in a more wealthy neighborhood where, you know, it also depends on the part of town you're in. If you're, let's say, I don't know, in like Tarzana or like somewhere relatively more like upscale, you don't see as many because people tend to be educated and get their pets spayed and neutered and stuff. But if you go to like a lower income community, such as like, I don't know, like Carson or like Skid Row areas, it is like kitties and doggies, but more kitties are running rampant, just reproducing sick. And when I say there are millions of street cats in LA, like, I mean it, there are millions of them. We are getting SOS calls like multiple times a day for cats on the street with illnesses, injuries, orphans, moms and babies. It's like an epidemic. It is really, really bad. And it depends where you are. But like I said, a lot of the more privileged neighborhoods do not see it and they're very unaware. But I have seen some awful, awful things in regards to the street animals in LA. And it is like, there is more than you can even imagine. LA is probably, at least what I have read, is it is the worst place in the country for stray cats.
Wow. And what it, and how are you guys getting them? Are people bringing them in? Are there volunteers that are going out and kind of capturing these cats? What does that look like?
It's, again, it's a case by case thing. My favorite part of rescue work is actually the hands-on stuff. I do a lot of networking and all that fundraising, but my favorite part is going on what I call them our rescue missions. Kind of like, you know, I go with maybe a friend or a volunteer, and we go to, someone will say like, oh my God, I found this cat with a broken leg in my yard. And we will go there and trap the cat. Or, you know, if the cat's friendly, we could just pick up the cat. Depends on the situation. That's my favorite. I like to go myself, but in the event that I cannot go by myself, I can ask another friend or volunteer or another rescuer to get the cat for me. Or sometimes the person who calls in is willing to transport the cat to us. Like if they're comfortable with the cat, or if it's just like, we get a lot of like orphan kittens, and those guys, if they're young enough, you can just pick them up and bring them anywhere. So those kitties are usually, people can bring them to us. So it all just kind of depends. But my personal favorite is when I can go out in the field and help some cats.
That's cool. And what's, I'm sure that's like really impactful on yourself as well. And yes, any friend or volunteer that comes along with, and what's, I wanted to ask, what's one memorable story you have from doing that?
Oh my goodness. There's so many good ones. I'm trying to think of, okay. I have a good one. So I can go on about these stories. Like we'll be in this podcast for like 3 hours. So I'll just tell you one. But way early on, I love talking about these things. Way early on when I was, I think Manny's Paws have been around for like 6 months. We got a call to a neighborhood in like downtown LA about stray kittens and a mom cat. And we went, and we couldn't find them anywhere. There was no sign of cats. And I waited around for like a couple hours, no sign of any cats. And then a postman came by and he was like, I see you have a cat carrier. And I was like, yeah, what do you know about any cats here? And he was like, actually two houses down the street, there is a huge cat problem. And I was like, oh, I think we were in the wrong place. So she walked us there and he showed us where to go. And again, we couldn't find any kitties. So I was walking around and exploring, and then I almost tripped on something. And I was like, huh, what's this? And I look down and I see the tiniest black fuzzball, like this big. And I'm like, oh my God, is this a kitten? And I bend down and I pick up this kitten, and I kid you not, like less than a pound, like the tiniest little kitten, tiny little black puffball, extremely malnourished. She was just sitting there, just for any predator to grab, no protection, no mom cat. And her eyes were just like pouring out like goop and pus, and she was just a mess. And she was like hardly even hanging in there. And I was like, oh my God, we got to rush this kitten to the vet right now. She's like shaking, and like she was so sick. And I was like, oh, this is, and I did, like, I just carried her, and I was worried about putting her in a carrier because she was so cold. So I just put her in my bra to keep her warm. And we brought her straight to the vet, and we got her eyes cleaned out, and she was just a severely malnourished, like 4 to 5 week old kitten. And it turns out that her mom had rejected her because she was sick. So wherever the mom cat was, she wasn't taking care of her. We named her Abyss because she was a black kitty, and we got her the treatment she needs. And now she is, it's been 2 years now, she's fat, happy, grown up, living her forever home. But that one really stands out in my mind because she was just so vulnerable. Like any animal, any person with bad intentions, she just completely trusted me. I picked her up. She started purring. She was blind. She couldn't see. So I was just like, wow, some of these animals are just so completely vulnerable. And anything could happen to them. And it was very almost humbling that she trusted me and like let me help her. And you know, we ended up returning back there and getting some kitties fixed and taking some more kittens in. But she really stood out in my mind. She was something special.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I'm sure you have, like you said, hundreds of stories like that. And yeah, it's really awesome that you get to see that on, you know, just on a maybe a weekly basis, daily basis. I think that's so cool that you get that you're a part of that. And how big is your team? What does that look like? Are you how big, small are you? Like, what's that organization like?
Oh man. So that is a really good question. And I'm almost embarrassed to give you the answer, but I will happily answer honestly. Honestly, it's pretty much just me. I have volunteers who help me out. I have people who drive cats places. I have people who will come with me on these rescue missions. But part of what Mandy's Paws needs to work on is establishing board members. We want to get our legal nonprofit status. We're in the process of like filing all the paperwork right now, because if we're legal nonprofit, then donations are tax deductible and we will get more donations. We get more discounts at veterinarians. So that's a process, but I'm working on recruiting board members. Actually, I have some people in mind who I'm going to ask to be my board members, but I mean, officially, like on paperwork, it's really just me. I have volunteers who help out, but in terms of like the responsibility, the financial responsibility, the paperwork, it's all in my name. It's a lot for one person. And I sometimes do feel like I'm drowning, even though I have some help. So something, a big goal for Mandy's Paws in the next year or so is to form a board with people who just want to do this for the animals. That is what they want out of this. That is their only motivation. People who just want to help. So I have a couple people in mind that I am going to ask to be board members, and then we're going to get our nonprofit status, hopefully grow our team, because it's just too much for one person realistically. And I'm still in college and I need to be able to pass my classes. And so the goal is to get more, but as of now, it's really legally, it's just me.
Yeah. And I think I was going to ask you that too. I'm like, what do you do? You know, obviously it seems like a common theme in all of these organizations is that people are just really passionate about it. Yeah. And this isn't what they do full time. Like, this isn't what I do full time. Right. Like, this is just, it's just, and so I can totally relate. And I think that's awesome that you're going to get board members and whatnot. Yes. I mean, even probably some of the faculty at your school that you're going to, or whether it's online or in person, might be interested. I was on a board with a gal I interviewed, and she had one of her ex professors on the board.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, it was so cool.
That's
I was
awesome.
Like, and they were doing, cause like you said, there are so many benefits to going that nonprofit route. And there's some things you can do that kind of make that money stretch. And I think that's a smart thing to do. And you kind of alluded to this, but what are some of your goals for the next year, 2-3 years coming up outside of that?
So I might need to take like a minor hiatus this semester while I'm trying to keep my grades up. But what I'm going to do is, if we do end up taking a little break, I'm going to use that time to get our nonprofit status legally, just become a charity out of the law, so people feel more comfortable donating, or, you know, people with more money donate. If you're, that's our first step now, is to become 501c3. After that, I would love to start. This is kind of a long way off. I don't know. You said 2-3 years, but it might take a lot longer. I would love to get a facility. That's just kind of a far off dream of mine, but I would love a small business building where we could keep kitties so they don't all have to go to foster homes. We could have them, you know, on site. We could maybe have a vet who works for us. I mean, it's a big dream, and I don't know if it's possible. I'm just a college kid doing her best, but maybe one day. I made the rescue happen, so who knows? Maybe I could make that happen. So 501c3, a facility. What else? Like I said, a lot more dedicated team members who can help out. Let's see what else. I'd love to do more adoptions. We've done a couple where we go and we have cats for adoption in person. And they're just so much fun. Like, people come and pet the cats and people can get food and hang out. And I would love to do more of those as well, because they're not only really beneficial for the rescue, they're just tons of fun and they kind of spread the word. So I think that's what I got in mind for our future.
That's really cool. And I think, don't sell yourself short, because it's one of those things and this is my personal experience too, where it's like the old adage goes, people overestimate what they can do in 10 years and underestimate what they can do in one. So like, things can unfold. I'm sure you've seen that too, just so quickly. So, I mean, keep up the great work. And I wanted to ask you too, you kind of mentioned some mistakes that you had, but what advice would you give to maybe your old self, or to just someone who is wanting to do something like this themselves, what would be one piece of advice that you wish you could know rewinding, you know, a couple of years ago?
Oh, I know exactly what to say for this. I would say this both to myself and any new rescuers out there. In the moment when you make a mistake or when something stressful is going on and you don't know if you'll be able to pay for a surgery and you're just freaking out, breaking down, just remember that it will be okay. Like, you will get through it, and if you choose to continue rescuing, you will be able to. There were so many times where I felt hopeless and I was like, oh my God, I have to quit. I have to give up. And I didn't. And it worked out. And as stressful as it was in those moments, I got through. I somehow pulled it together. I somehow fundraised enough money, or I somehow found a place, the right place for an animal. I always figured it out. I have never, something that I'm really proud of with our rescue, we have never had to euthanize an animal because we couldn't afford care. And that, it's never happened. And it's, if you are determined enough and you work hard enough, no matter how big the amount of money is that you need to save an animal, it's possible. Just calm down, take a breath, think about a month from now, you'll be okay, and this will be in the past. That's what I would say.
That's really cool. Like, just like, have that peace of mind. Like, don't worry. Yes. It's all going to work out.
And that's what I tell myself now during a crisis. Yeah. I've kind of learned like, well, I survived all these other crises, so I can get through this one.
That's cool. That's some truth. I don't know how old you are, but I wish I knew that.
22.
I wish I knew that at 25. Like, that's so that's amazing that you have that insight. So yeah, no, I know. And then where can people find you, donate, reach out, follow you, find animals like that you guys rescue? Where can we find you at?
So Instagram is our main platform, but we know not everybody uses Instagram. We post most of our adoptable animals on Instagram. We share posts about the animals in need on Instagram. We do have a website, which is mandypawsrescue.org. It's kind of under construction. It's not perfect. It has some glitches. I have a volunteer who's actually willing to help me kind of redo it. So I need to get back to him and plan that. I mean, you can find us on the website. You can send us an email through the website. That function does work fine. But if you do have an Instagram, that is the best place to reach out. Mandy's Paws Rescue is our username. And as for donations, we 100% of the donations goes to the animals. And since we don't have 501c3, if some people doubt that, we do post pictures of like our vet receipts and our vet documents, so people know that we are getting the animals the care that we are saying we're getting them. But yeah, we accept donations with Venmo, PayPal, Zelle, Apple Pay, pretty much most things. And they go directly to, if you want a specific animal to be, have your phones, like have your funds used for a specific animal, we will make sure that those funds go to that animal. For instance, right now we're fundraising for a kitten have hip surgery, and we have a lot of people who are sending donations specifically for that kitten, so I'm making sure to put those funds in like a separate account to keep them safe for her in particular. I think that's it. We have a Facebook page, but we don't really use it,
there's so much social media out there, it's like it's hard to get them all going.
It's a lot. I want a team member specifically for social media. That'll be somebody I recruit when we get our board members, because it's a lot for me to manage.
Yeah, there's so many moving pieces to running a rescue or a project at what you're doing, especially with the goals that you have. There's just all these different moving pieces. So I appreciate it, Kate. Thanks a lot for coming on. It was great talking with you. I'm excited to follow your journey and kind of see how this unfolds and see you guys rescue more and more animals. So, Kay, it was great talking with you. Thanks a lot for sharing your story.
It was so fun talking. Thanks for the opportunity. And, you know, to anyone listening, just do your part to help animals, and it feels really good.
All right. Thank you so much. Talk soon.
Talk soon. Thank you.